Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Nature Now is here for the second week in May. The air is absolutely fragrant with blossoms. This is Mary Robson enjoying the grand smell of spring. Last weekend, I observed dozens of smiling people carrying boxes of plants, native plants, garden plants. It's definitely that season. Today, we will share the spring world with Bob Jepperson, the author of Wild Love Story. But first, a mystery sound. This was recorded by Bob at the edge of a pond on Fidalgo Island. Hint, it's not a bird. We'll move into observations. Charlie Fleshman, our ever-helpful sound engineer, will help deliver these. Well, Charlie, the first observation is, how wet were we?
The sun appearance in early May has cheered us. Yes, rainfall in April was nearly twice the expected, 4.4 inches, when 2.5 is the average. Water year total runs from October 1st through April 30th, and this year, a Chimicum reporting station measured 32.1 inches, yes, wetter than the normal 27 inches. Craig's station in Port Townsend reports 18.1 inches so far for the water year. That's the average for the whole year in Port Townsend. What doesn't show up in the measurements, gray skies seeming to have persisted steadily for months, our socks, sweaters, and emotions stayed damp. Al Latham reported this data and added, take heart, the NOAA Climate Prediction Center prognostication for May and for May through July is warmer and drier than normal. His other advice is, the best way to deal with the weather is to get up each day, look outside, and say to yourself, yep, just the weather I was hoping for.
Okay. Great images of birds. I seldom talk about photography, but during BirdFest at Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society in mid-April, birdwatchers practiced photography and the winning photographs have been published online. Watching these photos is like a walk with a very good set of binoculars and a steady hand. The most common birds pictured were the smallest, Anna's hummingbird, and the largest, western bald eagle. Check the Dungeness River Audubon Center for these appealing photos, including two of female hummingbirds incubating eggs. The adult barely fits on the tiny nest. The photo looks as if the nest is wearing a particularly fancy hat.
Spring flowers at Katai Prairie Reserve. Watch for the brilliant blue of camas standing upright in the yellows of buttercup and other colorful blooms in May. The reserve near the Port Townsend Golf Course comes into particular beauty in spring and rewards more than one visit. It's maintained by the local Olympic chapter, who hosts regular cleanup parties at the Katai Prairie. Actions that are needed will include weeding and cleanup. If you would like to be a friend of the Katai Prairie, contact Dixie Llewellyn, 360-385-6432.
And the last one, you may want to get your violin out for a very sad tale. The world's oldest observed spider has died. At 43 years old, this trapdoor spider, named Number 16, had observers studying her for all of her life. Living in the Australian outback, she stayed in or near her burrow, conserving energy and avoiding predators. Contributing to her lifespan, said the scientists, were a sedentary lifestyle and low metabolism. No implications can be drawn from this for mammals. We are happily today talking with Bob Jepperson, who is a walker, a writer, has done sound recordings, including the one for our mystery sound, lots of beautiful photography, and all of these abilities mesh to produce intriguing visions of his world on Fidalgo Island. So, Bob, your topic for the day is quite beautiful, how spring is unfolding where the forest meets the pond. And a lot of us don't have ponds. I'm very much looking forward to what we find. So what's been happening just right now?
Well, there's lots happening, and I know our topic today is ponds. I just have to mention one thing, because my special interest is owls, and I try to be with them every day, year-round. It's easier right now because of the nesting season. But yesterday evening, I was at a pond, and I was watching a barred owl hunt. I stayed with him until it was too late to see. And I'm just getting to know this male. Because of where he hunts, I call him Swamp Guy.
Okay.
And that's not to be confused with Drain the Swamp Guy.
Right. Thank you.
He's an East Coast species.
Right.
We've been through their courtship. Now it's nesting season. So she's on the nest, and he hunts. And he's probably hunting for 5 miles right now if she has 3 babies in the nest. And next comes fledging, and I just love fledging season. I follow great horned and barred owl nests, and the fledging season is the highest drama season of the life for me. So anyway, that's kind of peripheral to ponds, but
I do have one question, though. Once the chicks are hatched, how long is it before they can fledge? How long do they have to grow to get their wings going?
Courtship starts in the wintertime. They start so early. And then when they lay the eggs, they start incubating right away. So they hatch at different days, sometimes a week apart. And incubation's about a month, a little over. And then in the nest for about a month.
Okay.
And then they branch for about a week. They go out on the branches and tightrope walk and exercise their wings and start jumping from one branch to the next. And then they're ready to take flight. So from laying that first egg to fledging, it's probably 9 weeks. Long process.
Well, long enough that keeps the father very busy bringing food in.
Oh, no kidding. She gets off the nest some. She'll go out and hunt. I found a great horned hunting the other night, and she was successful too. So They do get a break from their home chores.
Okay. So we are going back to the pond then.
Yes. You have to keep in mind that all I know is based on the place that I visit. So it'll be different at your wild place, different species, different timing.
Help our listeners by telling them a little bit about this particular set of ponds on Fidalgo Island, because some of them are going to want to say, gosh, can we see that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have a number of beaver ponds in the area where I go. There are 4 bodies of water that have beavers on them, and I would call 3 beaver ponds because the beavers created the dams that made the ponds. Mm-hmm. They don't just live there. They created the place. So we have the Big Beaver Pond, the Little Beaver Pond, and Mitten Pond. But we also have beavers in our lakes, and they weren't always there. They were trapped out at one time. My favorite pond was a creek running through the forest, and now it's 20 to 25 acres of pond, standing dead trees from the forest that was there. Lots of pond lilies. I can talk about that more later. A very rich place. They make such a big difference as far as diversity of life in a forest goes.
That is quite astonishing, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you, beaver.
Exactly.
So when you're watching the edge of this pond, I wanted to add also, this is publicly available, yes?
It is.
Okay.
Yes, and there are trails.
So
Thank goodness the trails don't go all the way around some of the ponds. Where they do, it has a little more impact on the life there. But one pond has no trails around it, and one on one side, and the other on one side. So it's pretty good as far as the design of the trails layout.
Could you describe it as loopy?
Loopy? the trail system?
Yes. Nothing personal, just the trails.
Yeah.
And how would someone find this on Fidalgo? That's the other thing I wanted to add.
Well, it goes by ACFL, Anacortes Community Forest Lands.
Okay, perfect.
So they can find it that way, and there are actually maps. But I should make this point, and it's one of the points that I hope comes out in my book, although I don't really address it directly, and that's that all my life I've found a wild place near home, and I prefer visiting a place over and over and getting to know it and getting to know the residents personally rather than being a tourist.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, I do visit other places, but it can be exciting to go somewhere, I know. But even if it's your own backyard, I really like the idea of people having a place nearby that they can visit often and just follow it through the seasons and get to know who lives there.
And that is actually the theme of both your book, Wild Love Story, and what we're talking about today. So we managed to get ourselves to the pond edge.
Okay, and the pond edges right now, the ponds are full. Actually, they dropped a little bit this week, and so I'm seeing the first beaver activity at their dams. They're pushing new mud up to plug leaks and raise the dams a little bit. They want to hang on to that precious water. Around the edges, well, we have skunk cabbages, and they produce the biggest leaves in the Northwest right now. They're over 3 feet tall, and they are so beautiful when backlit by the sun. To me, they become landscapes of glass art. They look like translucent, glowing panels of stained glass.
With a yellow chunk in the middle, right?
Yeah, we've got a few of the blossoms left, and they're known for their blossoms, but their leaves are just as beautiful and so large. We also, speaking of yellow, we have the early pond lily blooms out. We have yellow pond lilies on these ponds. They're just starting to come out, and there'll be many, many more. And then, speaking of wet edges, if you get around wet, boggy islands right now, or even the little bog logs, I call them, where logs have fallen into the water and soaked and rotted and now have little gardens of their own on top, nature has splash those wet landscapes with some pink paint recently. There's a woody shrub that likes wet feet, and it's in bloom right now. It's called Western Bog Laurel. And every year I look forward to seeing the bog laurel change our landscapes by adding pink and magenta. And I think part of the appeal for me is that I can't get to them, not without a boat. They just tease me from across the water.
Are these by any chance in the same genus as rhododendron or mountain laurel, or are they completely different?
Wow. Hey, I'm no botanist.
Okay.
I'm not sure I can go that deeply into them.
It was just curiosity because laurel is often used as a synonym for things in the rhododendron family.
Now that you've asked me, I'll just have to go look it up.
Okay.
And you know, I was wondering, I haven't met you in person, what's your eye color, Mary?
My eye color is brown.
Okay, so there are brown-eyed Susans, but I'm thinking of blue-eyed Marys that are out there right now.
Are they blooming now, the blue-eyed Marys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, they are, and they're thick on sunny, rocky slopes. They're tiny, and their upper two petals have little blue spots on them, and the lower two petals are kind of lavender, I think. And so that's where the name blue-eyed.
That's good. I like sunny, rocky slopes myself. So I had a question also in addition to the bloom. The last time we spoke, you mentioned that all of the ponds can get completely carpeted with the lilies.
Well, yes, the best ponds, in my opinion, are the ones that are the right depth for pond lilies, whatever that is. My favorite pond is 20 to 25 acres in size and just gets covered with pond lilies. And right now, they're a pretty nice carpet. As the stalks grow, they'll get elevated, and it'll be like a forest of pond lilies out there that the ducks can swim underneath.
Does this affect amphibians at all, like when you gradually get around to being a frog instead of a tadpole, or are they just basically ignored by amphibians?
Well, they change the light levels underneath.
Ah.
They screen out a lot of the light. There's a network of, primitive reptilian-looking roots that grow all across the pond bottom, and the stalks start coming up in late winter, the ones that have blossoms on them and the ones that will be leaves. And the leaves emerge rolled up, and then they unfurl like a flag, spread out flat on the water, but the stalks continue to grow, and it pushes them up in the air, and they wave there like flags in the breeze. So
and
the ducks especially love them. The one that has the most pond lilies is the pond where the ducks take their ducklings because they get the protective cover from them.
So they can teach them to hunt and eat without having them be exposed to predators.
Yes, they still get exposed to predators, but it affords them some protection. The other night, I got to watch something that was new for me. We have three mallard hens out on one pond right now with between 5 and 12 ducklings. And the one with 12 was swimming toward a beaver dam, and I was watching Swamp Guy, the male barred owl. And I thought, well, this will be interesting to see. And when she spotted the owl, she got very vocal, and her 12 ducklings got real tight up against her sides. And she swam right by the owl, vocalizing like crazy. And I wondered, is that owl going to try to take one of those ducklings? Because they can grab salamanders right off the water. But no, she got by. That owl wasn't willing to risk tangling with Mama Mallard there, so... Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
As I've only seen the mallards kind of strung out like a parade that wasn't very well organized. So
right. And at first they're like little bumblebees just darting every which way in that. And she's pretty frantic trying to keep them together. But I even recorded it, the sound that she makes, which means get close to me and stay close to me. And it seems to work when she wants them close. She utters this special sound.
Wow. Nature and all of the sounds. Have you seen any frogs or other amphibians in this edge of the pond? Okay.
Yes. We have three common species of frogs at the ponds I visit. And the ones that are vocal year-round are the Pacific chorus frog. Beautiful little green, usually bright green frogs. Small but big voices. And they vocalize year-round. But right now, in particular, is the best time of year because they migrate toward water from the woods, and they get in groups from 2 to hundreds. Like where I live, we have 2 wetlands within earshot of our house. They get deafeningly loud out there. In fact, we also live in Great Horned Owl territory. There's 3 territories. I can hear up to 6 owls a night from here. And when the chorus frogs start to chorus, then I have to quit recording because the background noise is so loud. I'm not complaining. I love the little guys.
I recently read something that said people have the misunderstanding that nature is silent at night.
Quite
the opposite.
No kidding.
Have you been seeing insects also? When the sun's out, I see more insects than I do when it's cloudy as it is today. But what's happening with insects?
Well, the insect world is just heating up over there. Spring's unfolding slowly this year because of all the cold weather we had, but that's not all bad. I didn't get my first mosquito bite until April 26th. That's almost a month later than usual. But I think that damselflies and dragonflies should be in the headlines this week. They're crawling up onto vegetation near the edge of the ponds. They're like little Houdinis. They're escaping their little nymph cases, which they leave behind, and they dry their wings, and then they take their first flights. But those nymph cases, especially the dragonfly nymph cases, are just wonderful. Look for them. They leave them behind, but they look just like the creature that crawled out of them. Look for them on grass and reeds and skunk cabbage leaves next to the pond. They're beautifully detailed, like little miniature coats of armor. There's a picture of one on page 50 in my book, Wild Love Story.
Okay.
And by the way, in Port Townsend, at the north end of Water Street, you have the wooden boat chandelier, and just today, they're putting Wild Love Story, they're giving it a feature display in their stores.
Well, that is probably one of the most blatant plugs that we have heard on Nature Now for quite a while, but thank you for doing it. Okay.
Hey, there's another one, because Squim has them at the Dungeness River Nature Center.
Okay. Y'all heard that, and we're going to just march right on here. We have enough time to talk a little bit about the mystery sound, because you recorded it. And I want to know more about what it is. We're going to sneak up on people because you can tell them what the mystery sound is, and then we'll be talking a little bit about the animal. But how did you record it, and what do you think it means?
It's not difficult to record the tail slapping of a beaver. The night before last, I was walking along the edge of a beaver pond, and I wasn't near the edge, really. I had tall salal shrubbery between me and the pond, but it was 7:48 p.m., I hear this kerplunk sound. And the beaver had seen me before I saw the beaver, which is often the case because they cruise along like a low-profile ship. They're difficult to see. And by the way, not all beavers tail slap. I know one that doesn't. And others are very aggressive and will swim toward people while they slap the water. They usually slap the water more than once. This particular one the night before last slapped the water 7 times. So once I hear a tail slap, then I point my sound recording device at them, and I'm very likely to record the next few.
So the obvious question is, what does a beaver tail slap actually mean?
Well, I don't think a beaver has ever told anyone why they do it. That's usually the case. We don't even know why humans behave the way they do, but there are some indications of why they might. It's when we intrude or something else intrudes on their space. I think it's a warning that you're in my territory. And some of them are aggressive and swim toward you while they tail slap. In fact, you want to keep some distance between you and a beaver because they can be combative.
And they have a lot of really strong teeth. If they can take a tree down and make it look as if it's been chainsawed, they could certainly take a nice chunk out of a human.
They could change the shape of your leg.
No, thank you. I don't think so. Is there anything else you want to add today since we have talked about the way spring is unfolding between the forest and the pond?
Well, maybe one more thing. The beaver ponds have been full to the brim. That's changing right now. We're starting to taper off in our rainfall. And so it's just this past week when water levels have begun to drop just a little. And this is the first week I've seen the beavers making mud repairs to their dams, raising them a little and plugging some of the leaks with mud. They want to hang on to the precious water.
Okay.
That's kind of where we are right now at the beaver pond.
Thank you very much for sharing the world of the beaver ponds on Fidalgo Island. We appreciate it a lot.
My pleasure, Mary.
Okay. Bye now.
Talk to you again. Bye.
Okay. Yes, you will. And the mystery sound today, obviously, is a beaver tail slap. As beaver populations increase and urban habitat is improved, these territorial critters are returning in earnest to local waterways. Scattered populations of beavers exist even throughout Seattle. One of the most notable areas is in Lake Washington, adjacent to the 520 Bridge and the Arboretum. And a quick glance at areas near the mouths of Longfellow and Thornton Creeks reveals telltale signs of beaver presence: fallen cottonwoods, gnawed alders, and floating, barkless, pointy sticks. Beavers, by the way, are rodents, and they have to keep chewing the way rodents do, or their teeth grow too long. Each year, a beaver family has 2 to 5 kits, or baby beavers. Together with the previous year's offspring, they comprise a family unit until next year's kits are born, and quite often the older kits are driven away by the parents. At this point, the 2-year-old beaver will travel up to 10 miles over land and water to find and establish a new territory. Nan Evans interviewed Scott Freeman last week here on Nature Now about the Tarbu Preservation, and he noted that beavers were helpful in establishing salmon territory. And some of this information comes from the Seattle Public Utilities. So finally, for events.
Volunteers are needed in Clallam County to participate in our Western Bluebird Climate Watch program. It's fun and easy. Contact Joyce Valmut for details at 785-554-6379.
Finally, May 11th, which is Friday, there will be Pigeon Guillemot study training. This runs from 9:30 to 11:30. It is hosted by the Olympic Peninsula Audubon Society, and they can give you more information about it. And finally, May 12th is Migratory Bird Count Day, nationally and internationally. The information I've seen says that it starts at 6 a.m. in Squim, Washington, with OPAS. I think you could start anywhere you wanted to and at any time of day looking for migratory birds on the Big Bird Day. So that's it. Goodbye for today from Nature Now, KPTZ 91.9 Port Townsend. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic, live, and eclectic reports. Thanks to Charlie Fleischman for engineering our words and sounds. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays with repeats here at KPTZ on Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 12 p.m. And podcasts are also available on the website, www.kptz.org.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Pond, performed by Vernon.